Welcome to the Deep Dive. This is where we take a stack of information, really dig in, and pull out what truly matters. Today, we're looking back over 40 years, actually, to an event that caused a pretty big shift in how the world approached rural development. We're talking about the 1984 International Exposition of Rural Development, the IRD. Our mission here is to figure out how this specific event became, well, a kind of movement anchor, how it moved the needle from standard economic models towards something much more, you know, human-centered, locally driven. Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah, it's a fascinating topic, and one I feel quite connected to, as I was actually involved with the IRD back then. What we're really going to see is this quite radical departure, moving away from those big top-down infrastructure projects towards genuinely empowering communities, letting them lead their own change.
Right. And to really get why IRDOD was so, well, revolutionary, we need to picture the early 1980s. It was a really complex time for rural development globally, almost contradictory, you could say. I mean, on one side, you had real progress. India achieving food self-sufficiency, that was huge. Smallpox gone globally. Even average incomes and life expectancy were ticking up in many developing nations. But underneath all that, there was this persistent mood of pessimism. Why? Because absolute poverty was still just crushing rural villages everywhere. It was a puzzle. These successes, they weren't scaling up. Why not?
And what's fascinating, which you need to grasp here, is the sheer urgency that was driving things. Despite all the efforts, many existing strategies were frankly falling short. The approaches felt fragmented. They often lacked a solid practical blueprint, you know, and the failures were real. They were hitting communities hard. So this created a critical period of intense self-evaluation, reflection. Across the whole development community, everyone knew something new was desperately needed. And that ferment, that searching, was absolutely critical for moving away from narrow strategies, like focusing only on agriculture, for example, towards integrated local approaches that really put people first.
And that profound need, that urgency you mentioned, that's what birthed the IRD. It wasn't just, you know, another conference call or meeting. It was a landmark thing, multi-year, multinational, all building up to this main event in New Delhi, India, February 5th to 15th, 1984. And its purpose, stated right up front, was powerful. To accelerate the replication of tested methods and models of rural development by bringing people together. Over 650 participants. But here's the kicker. 70% of them. Local practitioners. Community leaders. Not just academics or distant policymakers. This wasn't about outsiders telling locals what to do. It's about lifting up the voices of those already making things work on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And its core philosophy, well, it was truly radical for the time. Championing the centrality of the human resource to development, that was the phrase, and creating the capacity in rural people to carry out their own development.
Mm-hmm.
The focus completely shifted, empowering local communities, making them the primary drivers. You know, Tarsi Vitacci from UNICEF put it beautifully. He said, it will no longer work to try to spread messages that work. He said, those messages spread horizontally from village to village. It spreads because it works. The real test of our work is whether it is spreading laterally.
Mm-hmm.
That insight is just profound, isn't it? Real progress isn't top-down. It's organic, peer-to-peer, when something actually proves its worth.
Okay, so if real success spreads laterally, like Vitacci said, how did IRD actually do that? How did they facilitate it globally?
Exactly. Good question. Because it wasn't just a one-off event. It was carefully structured. Three phases designed to identify, share, and then replicate. So phase one, that was 82-83. National Steering Committee set up in 55 countries. They organized over 100 local symposia. And through that, they identified and documented more than 300 successful grassroots projects, real stuff happening on the ground. Then phase two was the big central international event, the CIE, in New Delhi, February 84. That brought these delegates face-to-face for direct exchange. And phase three, after Delhi, was all about getting those learnings out there, publishing, facilitating replication efforts. The Institute of Cultural Affairs International, ICAI, they were the main organizer. And they weren't new to this. They had over 20 years of experience in local human development, setting up quote-unquote model villages. So for ICI, this wasn't some experiment. It was strategic, a platform to really institutionalize methods they knew worked, plus having major co-sponsors like UNICEF, UNDP, WH, other UN agencies. That gave it huge global legitimacy and reach.
Right. So you have all these proven projects, all these practitioners sharing notes in Delhi. What came out of that? What was the concrete result?
Well, the IRD's foundational contribution seems to be the systematic identification of 12 key factors for effective rural development. And crucially, these weren't just theories somebody dreamed up. They came from analyzing over 800 successful projects across 55 countries. So empirically grounded, very practical.
That's absolutely right. And these factors, they consistently pointed towards a holistic, participatory, locally driven way of working. Just to give you a feel for how different this was, think about factor one, total community participation. This wasn't just, you know, ticking a box saying you consult locals. It meant building broad-based, genuinely bottom-up decision-making right into the project's DNA. Or look at factor five, project leadership. It stressed that leadership had to be local, not external experts swooping in, and it explicitly recognized women as vital leaders, which was quite ahead of its time in some contexts. Even factor 10, education and skills training. It wasn't just technical stuff. It included something called image education. Image education, what's that?
It's essentially about building local confidence, self-worth, helping people see their own capabilities.
Ah, interesting. So psychological empowerment, too.
Exactly. And the real insight, the big takeaway, is that these 12 factors weren't just a random list. They formed an intentional systems orientation, a whole interconnected blueprint for community empowerment.
So if you had to boil all those factors down, I mean, what's the single most revolutionary concept from IR that we should really hang on to?
The single most. I'd say it's that profound shift in perspective. Moving from seeing communities as, well, passive recipients of aid, to recognizing them as capable partners, actually as the primary drivers of their own development journey, the holistic integrated approach they talked about, it meant getting beyond single sector fixes, you know, just health or just agriculture. It meant looking at the whole picture, addressing interconnected needs to lift many facets of life together. And at the absolute core of it all was the human factor, putting people, human resources, ahead of just physical infrastructure. It really underlined this deep belief that individuals, that communities, have the inherent capacity to shape their own future, which makes greater local participation in decision-making just fundamental, a critical break from those old top-down models. It's about building from within.
You mentioned the New Delhi event itself. It sounds like it was much more than just talks and PowerPoints, or I guess overhead projectors back then. It was dynamic, a hub for multi-nation interchange, synthesizing experiences.
Oh, absolutely. The energy was incredible. You had community members, field staff, agency people, all intensely sharing and learning from each other.
And a really standout feature, apparently a highlight for many, was these coordinated field visits, taking delegates out to see 30 successful projects across 10 states in India, real learning by doing.
Yes, that was a deliberate pedagogical choice. Seeing is believing, right? Mm-hmm. Direct interaction.
There's this powerful anecdote I read about a delegate 50 years old from the TVA region in the U.S., took his first ever plane trip to get to India for this, and there he was, visiting a village, seeing grassroots development firsthand. That just really brings home the human element, doesn't it?
It really does. That emphasis on peer-to-peer learning, learning by seeing and doing, it was quite unique compared to typical conferences. And crucially, they had a comprehensive documentation strategy alongside it. The goal was to really articulate this new understanding and approach to development. So they had things like the Voices of Rural Practitioners series and these multi-volume books like Approaches That Work in Rural Development. It was a very deliberate effort to capture that knowledge and, importantly, share it widely to help with that lateral spread we talked about. Make sure the lessons weren't just lost after the event ended. And out of all this synthesis came what the IARD articulated as four fundamental understandings of development, basically reframing what development even means, that it's an evolving journey, not a fixed state, that it's multifaceted, complex, that it has to be participatory, and that it's a catalytic dynamic, it sparks further change.
Okay, those are big ideas. What about for the people on the ground, the practitioners, what were the actionable takeaways?
All right, beyond the big concepts, they identified three fundamental objectives for practitioners. First was shared responsibility, shared leadership, meaning the community itself takes the primary ownership, not some external agency. Second, economic self-dependence, focusing on maximizing local resources, building from what's already there. And third, self-identity, encouraging communities to reflect on their own heritage and innovate from it, not just copy-paste external models. And to actually achieve those objectives, they also laid out six critical success factors, things like crucially, women's advancement, and building participatory organizational structures. So it provided a really robust framework for action, not just abstract theory.
Okay, let's jump forward then. We have this movement anchor, the IR Day in 84. How did its influence play out? What's the long-term impact, even if there aren't formal studies tracking everything?
Well, the influence, you could see it almost immediately. And it was significant. You had academic papers citing IR's findings literally the same year, like one by T.J. Bembridge. And importantly, it really resonated with policy shifts that were starting to happen globally anyway. It kind of provided evidence and momentum for them. Like in India, their national program for improved chulas, those are cook stoves, they started bringing in NGOs much more systematically. That echoed Iyer's push for local involvement. Mm-hmm. You have to remember, the 1980s were a time when people knew rural policy needed rethinking. It couldn't just be about farming anymore. Iyer's holistic approach, showing that tackling interconnected problems together actually worked, really contributed to that broader shift in thinking. It provided real-world proof for that integrated approach.
Right. So bringing it back to today, what does all this mean for you listening now?
Well, probably the most direct, the most measurable legacy of IARD is how it became foundational for IKEI's own ongoing work. They explicitly call it the first international exposition of rural development. It kicked off a whole series. They've held 8 more international conferences since then, building on those themes. The 9th is actually planned for fall 2025 in Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
And as someone who was, you know, involved near the beginning, it's quite something to see IKEI still developing and sharing its technology of participation. Top methods.
Top methods. What are those exactly?
They're essentially highly structured but also deeply inclusive facilitation techniques. Ways to make sure every voice in a community meeting, for instance, is heard and genuinely contributes to finding solutions. It prevents just the loudest voices dominating. And that concept of model villages, demonstrating what's possible, that also remains core to their work. So while you might not find neat long-term impact assessment reports with IARD stamped on them everywhere, its influence is absolutely clear. You see it in its stated objectives, the immediate citations back then, and definitely in the sustained, continuing work of IAKI. It's very much a living legacy.
That really brings us to the core of it, doesn't it? The IARD back in 1984, it was clearly more than just a meeting. It acted as this movement anchor. It pulled together, it legitimized, and it amplified a really critical shift in thinking about development, moving towards local agency, human potential, and these genuinely holistic approaches. And that mission, sharing approaches that work, it still feels incredibly relevant today.
I think so. If there's one big lesson from the IARD, it's that solutions don't always have to be, you know, designed far away and imposed from the top down. So often, maybe most often, they emerge from within, from the inherent capacity that communities already possess. And maybe that leaves us with an important question, really, for any challenge we face today, big or small. Are we truly listening? Are we genuinely empowering those who are closest to the problem to find and lead their own solutions?
That is a powerful thought to end on. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep asking questions, keep exploring, keep learning. We'll catch you on the next one.